You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hey, Mike.
Next in, we've got Bill Burgess.
Hey, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Forrest Robinson.
It's the dawning of a new era, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Happy Inauguration Day, Mike.
Oh, thank you. And today in studio, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mikey.
Rob, it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
That whole Skype thing worked pretty well.
Skype thing was amazing.
It's opening up new doors. New doors and new vistas.
Hi, you Skype last time?
Yeah, we did. It was pretty cool. And thanks for listening, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Obviously, well, you can explain to people why you didn't get to hear it later on.
Okay.
That'll be a good story.
The Audio Nowcast is a podcast where we talk about the audio industry. We cover software, we cover hardware, we cover techniques, we cover pretty much anything that has to do with audio. Today, the show, we're going to be talking about the NAMM show. This is our post-NAMM show wrap up, and we're going to be talking about things that we saw and things that we didn't want to see, but we saw anyhow. And basically just giving our perspective on some of the stuff. But more than that, we're also going to talk about what does this all mean? You know, we've got all this stuff and we're going to discuss a few things that we saw. But at the end, what does it mean? What does it mean for you out there? What does it mean for the audio industry? What does it mean for the music industry? You know, every once in a while, there's events that are just a little bit bigger than your everyday, ordinary, you know, life or jobs. And today one of them was, you know, we're doing this on an Inauguration Day. And what that has to do with audio, well, for one thing, did you see that PA that they had to set up?
That was pretty big.
That was really impressive. And I know those are the guys out at Maryland Sound. And, man, that
so
was...
which microphone did they use?
I have no idea.
Did Maryland Sound do it?
Yeah.
They did that? Wow.
They did that.
That was huge.
That was one big setup. And it was just... It was really impressive just to see all those towers and all those people, and it just, you know.
Just imagine coiling all those cables.
Actually, just imagine that one gig possibly taking care of their entire year.
Yeah,
good point.
You know, 4 years.
That's true. But that was just really
made
impressive.
Made their quota.
Yeah. Well, and it's probably a single fiber going to each static.
Yeah, maybe so.
So
nowadays.
It's not that big a deal, wire-wise.
Could be wireless.
That's huge.
Though. Talking about pressure, though, can you imagine just with feedback or anything like that, being the sound guy?
Did you anybody recognize the mics in front of Ixoc Perlman and Yo-Yo Ma?
It looked like some newer Neumann.
Yeah, that's
stuff.
It did.
The Neumann.
They looked like studio mics.
B and K or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell.
I just thought that was, for a live mixer, that must be like the ultimate gig.
That must have been the gig, man.
The ultimate
must
gig.
Must have been.
Well, you know, 2 million people, it's pretty good. Plus the broadcast. You're doing all right.
It's a good crowd.
It's most of the world.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have been there at soundcheck, though. When do you think they did that, you know? Early that morning at like 2 a.m. or the day before?
They've been setting that thing up for days.
Yeah.
No.
I like wonder what the security check was for every cabinet.
Jeez.
Can you imagine?
It's like, look inside the cabinet.
Oh,
okay.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But I will say that, you know, after you put all the technology together, it was pretty flawless. It went just
and
really
everybody
seamless.
Recorded on a Pro Tools LE? A laptop?
I think not.
But it's, you know what? You have to admit that just going off on a little sidebar right now, just the fact that our government can change so radically from one regime to another with, you know, no bloodshed, no coups, no
so, I mean,
military.
This administration actually has a little bit of rhythm.
I was just listening to the
beginning of music, and it was like, go like this.
They did say this is the first administration in quite a while that was actually, like, dancing on the right beat.
Funny how the commentators on CNN just happened to mention that as well.
They did notice that.
They did notice.
See,
that's why I watched it on PBS. Everyone just shuts up there.
Even CNN was even better, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not going to try to say anything about how great our country is, because it's pretty evident that if we can go from dancing on the offbeat to dancing on the beat, then, you know.
Hey, if we were in Russia, we'd have to do this podcast in Russian.
Imagine that. Putin is still hanging around. They saw him on the news tonight.
Yeah, Bush called him to say goodbye, right? Yesterday or the day before. I'm still around.
All right. Well, sometimes you just have to stop and just appreciate history when it's being made, and you get to have the privilege of witnessing history. So,
cool.
Moving on. Speaking of history, let's just jump right in. Let's talk about the NAMM show on our last podcast.
I thought you were saying Michael Jackson in history.
No, more recent history.
On our last podcast, that me and Rob were at and Bill was at, we were talking a little bit about what was going to happen at the NAMM show. And one thing we kind of asked was what was the mood and what was the vibe that we were going to get off the NAMM show? If it was going to be an upbeat show, if manufacturers were going to be thinking positive, or if it was going to be a really conservative show because manufacturers were kind of pulling back. And let's start with you, Rob. Just give us the overall opinion, what you thought about the show. And
well, I thought before the show, I thought it was going to be maybe kind of depressed. And I made the joke last time that if you went to a booth and they had those tote bags hanging on the stick and you took a tote bag and you opened it, you'd see inside of it all the resumes of everybody who works there because they're all looking for the next gig. Yeah. And there's a little bit of that going
on.
You
mean a tissue design?
Yeah.
To name one. Church people laid off?
Yeah.
Yeah, things were kind of scary there. But overall, I was worried about – I was just thinking the whole industry was going to just come out of the show being really depressed. And I didn't find that at all. Actually, most of the people I talked to afterwards said the traffic by the booth was actually pretty good and they did some good business. And I'm not talking about just one or two companies. I talked to a bunch. And the mood that I was getting afterwards is, you know, obviously times are hard and everybody has to be kind of creative. But it wasn't that bad. And even some of the people who work with the Audio Nowcast, like Aphex, I mean, Marvin was telling me that he actually had really good traffic and did some good business. So I don't think it was all doom and gloom. I think DigiDesign especially let go a bunch of people that we were kind of shocked about. And it's a little weird to see a company changing like that. But, you know, it's a giant corporation, and it's owned by Avid, and it's a complicated company, and they do a lot more than just service our industry. It's a complicated company, and if they're making changes that they think they need to make to stay in business, then that's better for everybody than them not staying in business. And we don't have any choice but to watch and see what they're going to do, so that's what we're doing. But it was weird to see some friends who've been there for a really long time not there anymore. But the truth is the good ones get swept up pretty quickly by other companies. There's still a lot of good stuff going on out there, even though it's kind of shaky.
Bill, what did you think about the atmosphere of the NAMM show?
It seems very much the same to me. I mean, except with the exception that Apple wasn't there for good this time.
Which was strange. That was strange.
It is strange. Last year, they didn't have a booth on the floor, but they had a room upstairs. Right. And so with that exception, all those people, all those old colleagues from Apple were still there. I saw them all. And I felt like it was really positive. Everything was ramped up, and it was just as many mullets as there were a year before.
I will add, the security was way tighter, and it was impossible to get in unless you had a photo ID that matched your badge.
So sure. Except for around to the side.
Oh, was there a...
Yeah, a little side entrance
little
where the
there?
Lady wouldn't check.
Oh, because overall, I think there was a lot less sort of random people who shouldn't have been there, weren't there, but it was also harder to get people in who you wanted to try to get in. It was a little tighter.
Andrew, what did you think of the overall vibe?
Well, I mean, it was packed. I was expecting it to be a little smaller and a little emptier, like AES was, but
yeah, no, it
was
seem too
it
different.
Was packed. I mean, I was trying to get down sort of the middle aisle across the show at, I don't know, 3:30 on Saturday.
Right.
Couldn't move. Yeah. Couldn't move. So obviously there's no problem with traffic, and that's with it being much, much harder to get badges, like you were saying.
Right.
I mean, it used to be whatever, you know, meet somebody outside. Oh, you're leaving? Let me take your badge.
That's
you know,
right.
It's like following people around for a parking spot, where now you had to have a badge. All those people had badges.
Right.
And I didn't get that much time to actually check stuff out, unfortunately, because I was working a couple of booths and I was only there for one day. But no shortage of people, that's for sure.
Forrest, what did you think? What did you think of the whole atmosphere? Not necessarily products yet, but just like atmosphere.
The atmosphere?
Yeah.
You know, as far as numbers... I found it, pretty, you know, a pleasant experience being able to get around. I mean, it was the same way last year. I felt like it was actually lighter this year than even last year, as opposed to 2 years before where I had the not able to move around experience. But I actually sensed a bit of pleasant humility amongst some of the corporations there. And the real blessing is actually knowing, and I, just like you, I did not I wasn't able to get around, just like a couple other people here, to see product. But it was a real blessing to go around and see people that I did actually know from some of these corporations. But I sensed a nice bit of humility. It was like, there weren't, a whole bunch of the big attitude vibe going on. You can, you know, a couple people I talked to from several companies, you know, a couple people from each company all said something like, you know, well, this is a hard time, but you know what? We needed this to happen. It just helps us scale back down and focus back on, you know, what really matters with this company and what it is we're supposed to do.
All right.
So that was the overall vibe each night, and the hangs afterwards were.
Scott, what about you? Nice. What about your?
Yeah, you know, I found a lot of the manufacturers cautious but positive. I didn't get any negative out of it, but they were all kind of waiting to see how it was going to play out. Mm. They knew there was a slight downturn. But what I did notice was even the big pro audio companies, they were all starting to go towards MI products with, you know, companies like TC coming out with a bass amp and a lot of guitar bass stuff. And a lot of the companies that in the past that were kind of pro audio are very much supporting the MI business. And everything from what you would buy in high school, college, you know, young gigging musicians. And they were pricing a lot of products within that range. So, you know, you weren't seeing a lot of products that were $5,000, $10,000. You were finding a lot of products that were maybe $1,000 to $5,000 at most.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the I pretty much agree with most of what you guys said. You know, it was definitely a positive show. And there was a real focus on getting back to the basics. It seemed like if a company did something really well, they really emphasized what they did. But yet, at the same time, there was some really good innovations, you know. And let's just start on a couple things. You know, we're not going to go over all the highlights of the NAMM show because there's a lot of great websites out there if you want to just go in and get the minutia of you know, what specific individual products came out and press releases. You know, you could go to Harmony Central or Create Digital Music or Gear Sluts. But let's just talk about a couple things. And the first thing I want to talk about, and Rob, you can definitely give us a good insight on this, is Cubase 5.
It's one of the things I touched on during the last podcast was that there was going to be some innovation, and it was just – I was sort of giving a hint of what was going to be coming at NAMM, but – there was some real innovation.
Yeah, why don't you – let's start with Cubase 5. Why don't you tell people a little bit about what Cubase 5, what the new version is, and some of the really cool things about Cubase 5.
All right. I hadn't actually seen it before the show, but I had sort of a hint of what was coming. And I'll tell you about Cubase 5, but it was cool to see at this show that all the main MIDI sequencers that were there – we're showing some pretty cool upgrades, and it's nice to know there's still some cool development going on there.
Right.
I mean, Pro Tools has definitely moved way further ahead with Pro Tools 8. The MIDI is way better. But Cubase 5 is another big jump, and it was pretty cool. The main things about it that I thought were cool, for one thing, it has sort of their own version of a Melodyne-ish tuning plugin built in now. Right. And it's really cool that it's integrated right into the sample editor, so it's really quick and easy to adjust the pitch of stuff and to build your own harmonies. But it can also do things like you could play, say, a harmonica track in and it'll analyze the pitch and then it can convert it to MIDI. It can print whatever you've just played in as a score, you know, using score notation. It's just really quick and responsive and easy to get around on. So the tuning stuff was one big deal in Cubase. Another big deal was that you now have what I think they call an expression editor. So if you're using an orchestral library that has different articulations set up by key switches on the keyboard, for instance, like let's say you're recording a violin part and you want staccato violins, maybe you hit a low C on the keyboard before you start playing the violins. Then you want marcato, so you hit C sharp and you keep playing. And then you want legato, so you hit the D. And so you're using the lower half of your keyboard as the sound switching keys, and then you're playing the performance with the right side of the keyboard. Well, in the old days, what you'd end up with then, it would sound correct when you played it back through the orchestral library, but if you went to print the score, you'd see all these low notes on your score that were actually just there to call up different articulations of the sound. Well, now in the new Cubase, it deals with those intelligently. So when you open up your MIDI editor, instead of showing you those low key switch notes as notes, it shows them as expression changes. with a really nice graphical approach. So it'll show you these notes are marcato, these are staccato, these are legato. And it comes with templates for all the big libraries. So if you're an orchestral composer or anybody who's using key switches, it makes scoring so much easier. I mean, I went from needing hundreds of tracks, you know, each one with a different articulation sometimes, to being able to do a lot of single orchestral sections on one track at a time. And then when you print out the score, you don't have any of those low notes because it knows that those aren't musical data. They're just expression information. So that was pretty cool. It also comes now with a new drum machine, which is sort of like an MPC, and it can automatically slice your loops and just drop them each on a pad, which is really cool. It also has a mashup loop processor where you can take a bunch of different loops, and it will, using artificial intelligence, slice up those loops, and then you have automatable sliders for how much you want it to vary the way it plays the slices back.
Right.
And it's not just random. It's reproducible. If you do a program – it's not just going to do whatever it feels like. You actually, as an editor, design what you want it to do. So you have total control over it, and it sounds really good, and it's really fast to get around on. And probably the last big feature is it now has an intelligent export window. So in one screen now, you can have it export all of your audio tracks, all of your virtual instrument tracks, all your effects returns. Basically, everything in your session, you can have it render it to audio files, and they all start at the same time code, and it makes it very easy to interchange your Cubase files to other workstations. So, like something we've done plenty of times is output something from Cubase and then mix it in Pro Tools. It's super easy now. You don't have to output each track separately. Huge time saver.
The thing about the Cubase 5 upgrade, though, is a lot of the stuff that Cubase brought out, you know, you've been able to get in other sequencers for a little bit.
Yep.
But it's just, if you're a Cubase user, it's, you know, it's been just a big, big hole in your system for some of these, like the drum machine and some of the other ones.
It's really elegant to have it all together.
Yeah. And now that they're there, you know, it brings them back up because, you know, for a while they're, you know, I was kind of concerned about Cubase. You want Cubase. You want Steinberg to do well, and you want them to be out there because all the different manufacturers keep everybody honest and keep moving forward.
Definitely.
And, so it's good to see them
The one last thing, I mean, it's also giving people so much more value, which is something that basically Logic started.
Right.
Having so much value-added stuff in the box. Logic basically changed the game for everybody. Pro Tools comes with a bunch more stuff now. Cubase comes with more stuff. And the one I forgot about is with Cubase 5, you get a convolution reverb that comes with like 70 different spaces, and it sounds really good.
Yeah.
And so this is all – and it's pretty efficient processor-wise, too. It doesn't bring the computer to its knees. So Cubase 5 is – you get an amazing amount of stuff in the box, and I think it's – what? Between $500 and $600.
Yeah, I think it's still $500. So it's
pretty crazy.
It's really cool.
Yeah, with everything.
Yeah, it brings it up. It brings it aligned with the Logic, about on the same level.
So yeah, Logic
Pro
really
Tools 8
changed
is
it.
Also around that area, isn't it?
I think Pro Tools 8. I think is
isn't it
cheaper, isn't it? Actually, I don't know.
I don't
want to speak
out of turn. Everyone's within the $400 to $600 range for, you know, the package.
The thing is, there's variations of the Pro Tools with and without hardware, so I don't know how the pricing works.
On the Cubase 5, can you make your own convolutions?
Yes.
Cool.
You can.
Another thing that I thought was pretty cool, I don't know if anybody checked it out, was the Akai Ableton controller.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was
right
cool.
That's my favorite thing of the show.
That was cool.
Absolutely.
That was the I forgot what the
it's an MP, let's see.
This is what we call
looking
an
at the iPhone, APC-40.
It's the APC-40.
Way to pull that out, Mike.
Excellent.
But yeah, that's pretty cool. And, you know, you can go online and Google that and get, there's several videos online already of the APC-40. But essentially, it takes your Ableton window and puts a button for every loop, puts a button for what else?
Loops,
track grouping,
bank select.
Banks.
It's like any – do you guys know what the Monome is? It's a really cool one-off
right.
MIDI controller, and it's just a big bank of lights, perfect for Ableton. This is like a Monome with faders, and I was very happy.
It's really elegant the way you can – even the way itself maps – you know, the effects and self-maps your instruments and things like that. It's really cool. It's a really hip device. That one's going to be – you're going to see that.
They only had two of them, and my friend Houston was doing the presentation, and somebody ripped one of them off.
No.
Are you serious?
Wow.
No, really?
They only have one.
Now they only have one.
They should have thought about building more. Exactly. They might sell some.
They've got one, but it's really expensive.
Yeah. Oh, man. I remember so one.
Not for somebody.
Well, you know what? Actually, it's interesting to hear that because last year, I heard a lot of stories about theft from different booths. I mean, even Aphex, they lost a microphone, right? The middle of a demo, they went to continue a demo.
So with all the security, it's not that.
Well, that's what I was wondering. With all the security, was that going to affect it? But that's a pretty big little box.
Nobody can get in who isn't who they are, but the mics can all come out.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, that is kind of scary. I did see. Did you guys see the TC Helicon? I don't know if you were around there when the when their new iMac fell off the shelf.
No,
it was one of their demo stations in their booth. And. And you heard this crash, and I looked over, and a shelf fell, and the iMac just shattered. The glass shattered. It was kind of sad. It was one of those brand new ones, too. But
it's probably a loner.
Probably, you're right.
I'm serious.
And they had some cool stuff. I don't know if you guys checked out their pedals for vocalists. They had some really cool harmonies.
They always have the best demo singers standing there singing these songs and accompanying themselves. The Country Girls and... Yeah. You always hear these incredible harmonies coming from the booth.
They had this one pedal where this...
The pedal can hear the harmonies played on your guitar and sense what the key is. So when you sing, it does all the changes based on the input of the instrument and then can harmonize within that key.
That's an intelligent...
That's what she was doing.
Technology right there.
Maybe there's vocals in our future, huh? If anybody can sing.
Well, there's also the pedal, too, where you can input the chord. It's like a vocoder. You can import the chord, and it'll do the harmony of whatever chord that you input and sing along with. It was really cool.
She's sponsored by American Idol.
I don't know, but she did the... if you're familiar with Imogen Heap, Hide and Sink, she did a real-time version of that song that was just amazing. Hit all the harmonies and everything. It was pretty phenomenal. Andrew, did you see anything that was really kind of cool? I know you didn't get to see it live, but any?
Well, actually, the new plugins that Waves has at the moment are pretty cool. There's the Tony Maserati bundle, which are aimed more for like LA and new people, where they're like all-in-one processors. Like the vocal plugin has got compression, EQ, some effects, and you just get a few knobs, but unbelievably cool interface, too. This big circular meter that's really cool. And then Center, which is their new – it's sort of an imaging plugin, but it's not MS. So it can sense the phantom center image of a stereo signal, and then you get a fader to mess with it. So you can pull out the phantom center. You can emphasize the phantom center. It's really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Which one is that?
Center. And then the other thing was the new Kima hardware, which they weren't there. Symbolic Sound wasn't there showing it, but it was at one of the booths, and it was pretty cool. Very cool.
That's cool.
It was where the Continuum keyboard was.
Yeah.
With the software, is it still Kima code, or was it
always?
In English?
Yeah. It's their own. It's their own language. Yeah, there's a language, but there are thousands of prototypes, so it really is kind of a drag and drop. I mean, for people who don't know, it's sort of like a ridiculously powerful digital version of a modular synth, which you can program to do anything, but some of the stuff it can do is crazy.
Wow.
And they've got new hardware where it does it all in real time, and you talk about cool hardware design and people thinking outside the box, this hardware has a little display, an organic LCD, is that what they call
it?
LED, organic LED display on the front, and a little touch pad across the bottom. And the only connectors on it are Ethernet, USB, and FireWire.
Wow.
That's it.
That's cool.
Is it still cards within the computer?
No.
Or is it?
That's it. You hook it up FireWire to the computer, the software, interface software runs on the computer, but everything compiles and runs inside the box. They write their own drivers for 30 or 40 different MIDI and audio interfaces. So you just plug it in and it works, and you can map all the inputs and outputs.
Would it be able to run within Pro Tools as a rewire situation?
No, but it can show up digitally inside Pro Tools. I mean, it's not rewire, but and some of the sounds, especially with the controller, it was ridiculous.
It was something from a keyboard.
Very hard to
hear.
Describe, but like it does. Well, one of the things that the Kima can do that basically nothing else can do is this real-time cross-filtering, where they call it morphing and things, but you can basically set up what amounts to impulse responses of samples. So not an impulse response of a space, like a convolution reverb, but an impulse response of a string, like a violin, and then an impulse response of a dulcimer. And the patch that we were listening to at the booth, in real time, goes between these two sounds, but in a way that it's the first time that stuff has not sounded like a crossfade. Because usually it's like, yeah, I'm morphing, but it really just sounds like a crossfade.
Right.
Whereas this was seamlessly going from a hammered dulcimer to a sustained violin that could then, with no new attacks, so it sounds like it's pitch bend, but in like an 8-octave range with no aliasing, because it's not pitch bending, it's actually morphing between the samples without reattacking, and all in real time. And ridiculous. And
you know, very musical, too.
You know, the list price is something like
That? Well, it's interesting because it used to be, the way they always used to have it is there was a chassis that had some DSP in it, and then you got expansion cards. So, like, I've got an old Capybara and 7 expansion cards, and I probably spent $12,000 over the few years that I filled the thing up. Now they just have 2 models, and they're both this little tabletop box. One of them is, I think the fully kitted out one is maybe $5,000. It might be a little
slightly
less.
Under the
it's like $4,700. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then they have a cheaper one, and it might even be $1,500.
Wow.
Which is half of what the big one is.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, we didn't see the small one.
No.
They didn't have it
there. I mean, it looks exactly the same. It just doesn't have as many chips inside.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, that sounds like something that we'll get the cheaper one of.
Yeah, exactly.
But it sounds pretty phenomenal. By the way, the TC Helicon box that I was talking about before was the Harmony M. It's a little stomp box, but they came out with a whole line of really cool little stomp boxes for vocalists. So the singer-songwriter out there, you know, they're thinking of you. Well, we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about NAMM, and then we're going to go on to a few other subjects. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we talked a little bit about the NAMM show. And we're just going to wrap up a few other things. Of course, did you see anything that you liked? Any?
I checked out a couple. I went by like Roland and Cork to see what was going on in the keyboard department, but right. I didn't really stay long because I haven't seen a whole lot of evolution in the keyboard technology, which has me kind of thinking. I don't know. Maybe they've kind of brought everything out of the barrel, you know, because all the competition that's been going on in that department.
Like Kima.
Basically. So, you know, no, not really. You know, checked out a few acoustic guitars and, you know, different drum things, and I haven't seen many changes in that, so.
Scott, what about you? I know you told me about a reverb that I did not get to check out, but that sounded pretty cool.
You know, I went to a Waves dinner, and a couple of the engineers were talking about a reverb I'd never even heard of. Was it Bracasti?
Bracasti, isn't it?
Bracasti?
Something like that.
No, I missed that conversation.
Oh,
I
didn't
know.
Anyway, there's a bunch of ex-Lexicon gurus that left, created their own company. They were at the Summit booth. And it's just a black reverb. I never would have stood out, would have never noticed it. Searched them out, listened on the headphones, and from a headphone standpoint, I was pretty blown away because most reverbs to me have a little metal ting, and when you hear it, the room simulation, it sounds like reverb rather than room simulation. This was smooth on everything from acoustic guitar, drums, and dialogue, because dialogue usually always has a certain sound to it when it's quote-unquote reverb. It's broken into 3 groups, early reflections, sort of their version of it, reverb, and then they have a whole other one set up for bass. For low-end reverb, which to me was really interesting because you can do a version of early reflection, a short reverb, just for the low end, And it really doesn't sound like anything other than it makes it fuller. So all of a sudden I could take a sound and give it a lot more fullness and thickness to it without making it feel like it's stuck in a room. I was pretty blown away, and you can stack them via Ethernet. Right now they're stereo in, stereo out, whether it's analog or digital. They've got a Lark or a remote for it, and it's kind of cool. It's a black device with all red lettering. The whole LED is all red, and very impressed with that.
How much were they asking?
About $3,000.
Hmm. All right, well, I got to mention a few things. Number one, I actually finally got to play with Ocean Wave drums.
They rock.
Yeah, really?
They are.
Man, I heard Hot and Cold. I couldn't hear anything in between. Oh, some people were into it, and some were like, man.
I've been using them.
They're really good. They'll bring your computer to its knees, but really? They're good. Yeah.
No, well, that's what I heard. I heard they were
kind of compared kind to like pigs. The BFD2 stuff.
Oh, there's no comparison. No, they're way better.
And the rooms, it's the room that they recorded them in. They sound so good. They're so aggressive. I mean, they're not for everything, but if you find what you can put them into, you know.
As a drummer, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Did they just take drums that other drummers did in other sessions, and they're not getting any sort of points?
No. It's all recorded. It's all recorded just for that library.
Yeah. That was half serious. Okay. Dig it though. After 8 years of living in Atlanta and working with, I am so sorry, I apologize in advance for how this is going to sound, but we're working around that hip hop industry. Dude, it will change your attitude. Hits on the radio, you know what I mean. Anyway, please continue. Yeah. Okay, Ocean Wave drums.
Ocean Wave, you know what? They're your friends. You can love them.
Yeah, Ocean Wave. The stuff is good, and actually, we know some of the people who've recorded that stuff, and it's really good stuff.
It really is.
But what I was going to say is, it will bring your computer to your knees. But I got to give a little mini shout out to the Muse Receptor. Muse Receptor 2, yeah. The Muse Receptor was always a cool little box for playing sample libraries and virtual instruments. Instead of in a computer, you play them in this little two-space rack mount box. And Receptor was always cool, and now they have Receptor 2, which has faster processors, and you know, it's just sort of the logical growth of the product. But it can play the Ocean Wave drums and a whole bunch of other plugins that a lot of computers can barely play. It can play them. No sweat.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's because it doesn't have to run any kind of graphic operating system, and it's a very fast processor, and it's all dedicated towards playing these instruments. So Receptor is something I've been looking at for a really long time, but with Receptor 2, it's really cool. I think we're going to make the move now to start using it. And Ocean Wave drums is specifically one of the ones that a lot of people have a hard time playing in their computer. I mean, the copy I bought of Ocean Wave drums actually came on a 10,000 RPM hard drive, which is just barely what you need to play it. I mean, it will play off of that as long as your computer's not busy, but well, Receptor makes it a lot easier.
That's the 96K version, I would imagine, right, that you have, right, which it sounds ridiculous. It's so – I had so much fun just playing on the keyboard. It's like having the best drum room with the best drum set at your fingertips.
Well, and if you get to hear Dave Kirzner play it, who's one of the guys who recorded it – you realize that with some practice, it's pretty ridiculously
he's
good.
He's the perfect trade show drums on keyboard really is. Guy, and
he
has
is.
Been for years.
Yeah.
Okay. Next thing that I want to point out is, what's up with all the ukuleles? I mean,
oh man,
there was a gazillion.
I heard some beauties, and I'm not even into ukuleles. Yeah. I've heard some beauties this
My
year.
My daughter this year for Christmas, her entire list was ukulele melodica. That's all she wanted. And that's what she got. So I don't know why they're so big right now, but they're huge.
I was talking to a guy who has a music store back east, and his music store is literally being saved by ukuleles. The ukuleles is saving his store. He's selling so many ukuleles. And I went downstairs, and I could not believe all the ukuleles that were there.
I hadn't even hit downstairs. I know that Hohner. You know, the music company Hohner had some beautiful, like, exotic – I've never seen the ukulele with exotic finishes, unless I'm just, you know, crazy. And
well,
they've always
had them. Like if you went to McCabe's, you know, they've had a wall of ukuleles forever because that's what they do. But it was always in specialty acoustic instrument shops and stuff like that. And now
they're everywhere. If I'd seen Tony Iommi playing a ukulele, you know, seen Sabbath ukulele, you know, I might have.
You know, I saw something though incredibly sad.
Oh,
or just odd. Okay.
Okay.
It was over at Fender. Did anyone happen to see this? Okay. I sat there and I said, wow, new kind of guitar. Looking at it going,
what is that? And I'm looking at, and it's a Strat, and they got like a kind of a poly kind of thing, neck. And I take a closer look, and I walk over. It's Guitar Hero. Yeah. They made dedicated guitars that have full maple necks, full bodies, that are built out with the buttons. And then, and I saw these two guys just flying on it. And yeah, Fender's now got a Guitar Hero guitar that's a real, well, it's all wood. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no strings, but they got the tuning pegs on the top.
But it's just a controller, right?
Yeah, it's just a controller.
Yeah, there's only four or five, you know.
But you think about the bands that are now on the road, love it or not, Iron Maiden is bigger now than they were in the 80s. I saw this overseas in Europe. I mean, AC/DC's on tour. Man, Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
Yeah.
Put these bands back out on the road, in the studio, releasing new records. No kidding.
No.
Well, the only bummer, though, is the music-making video games are kind of on the downturn. They're not selling as many as
No
they
way.
Used to.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're kind of at that fad.
The video games have gone down?
Yeah.
I need a job.
But yeah, but that was kind of cool. You know, getting back to ukuleles for 1 second. Number one, I didn't know there was so many different types of ukuleles. I mean, you got the sopranos and you've got the bass and you've got the big ones. But the second thing too is, I was talking to a guy who was selling ukuleles and he was saying that in a lot of music, they're starting to play them a little different. It's not always the strum. It's not always the tiptoe through the tulips. So some of the instruments that you can't really, you know, if you listen to like folk music or some of the acoustic stuff, you'll hear a ukulele in it and you won't even know you're hearing
ukulele. Does this mean Tiny Tim's making a comeback?
Oh man, please.
I hope not.
Please, mommy, make it stop.
But it was really interesting. You know, it's
well,
really
I think it's because
cool.
It's so small and portable, and other than there being an octave jump, it's tuned like the top four strings of a guitar.
Right.
So any guitar player can just pick it up and go. Like my son took my daughter's and was immediately playing Led Zeppelin on it.
There way. To ukulele.
And if you, the problem is that every music store in the country has these $30 ukuleles that are junk.
Right.
The intonation's terrible. They sound bad. But if you play a good sounding ukulele, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's completely its own color.
Well, you know, that's a good point that you made though on the junk ones, because what you need to do is you need to watch out for those $30 ones because they won't hold the tune, especially if they're direct, you know, if the peg is directly connected to the string.
Which most of them are, actually. I mean, I'm only, because I researched them. I mean, you're not going to find geared tuners unless you special order them, but even for $100, you can get one where it's friction tuning, but it's good.
Right.
And they stay in tune and they're great.
I saw a lot of geared tunings, though, because I was actually...
I'm sure that's like the trade show thing now. Yeah. It's like, hey, check us out. We've got the geared tune.
No, that's probably... You know? You're probably right, because you'll probably see more of them out there. But, I mean, I was really close to getting a ukulele. Ask Rob. He knows how to
do it. Yeah, he was teetering over the edge.
You should do it. They're fun. My daughter is having so much fun, and you start off and there's some chords that are easy and then it gets really hard, and
right.
She's finding songs and like, all right, well, I guess I have to learn that chord.
Yeah.
So she comes out singing Oh Canada on the ukulele.
You mean with no guitar prior
zero
guitar.
She's been playing bass for about a year, but you know, there the tuning's only the same for two of the strings.
Sure.
You know, so it doesn't really translate at all. But she knows enough about music that she's like, oh, I need to play that chord.
There's a lot of schools that are starting kids off with the ukulele, too. That's another one of the reasons why.
Like
there's
the string version of the recorder.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, next year at NAMM, you know the big thing's going to be they're going to have, like, automated servo-controlled tuning, you know, like they have for guitars where alternate tunings, you hit a button and it automatically goes.
They don't have ukuleles with whammy bars and locking
nuts. There you go. Fuzzed out ukulele.
A ukulele rock star, you know?
Oh.
Actually, I predict
here we go. Okay. We need to make sure that we're going to get hooked up with some kind of profit from
the ukulele. And I will predict within 6 months or less, Andrew will have used fuzzed out ukulele on something. If he hasn't already.
Absolutely.
I don't doubt that.
You know what I saw a lot of also was virtual guitar amps
and
pedal. It used to be, you know, you had three or four of them. Now it seemed like everywhere I turned, everybody had a laptop open up for their version of a Marshall and a Roland Jazz Chorus and Voxes. And I mean, everyone had one. Marshall had one and Vox had one.
It's just the technology thing, though. I mean, it's like when pitch shifting started sounding good, it was because someone figured out some math and then everyone could do it. People have figured out how to model amps, so now everyone's doing it. And what's going to be the difference is either whose models sound best, but also I think we're going to start seeing more hardware with models and things, and that kind of innovation is
already started. I mean,
set them apart.
Yeah, Line 6 has got it, and Marshall's even starting up.
And not only just virtual though, you see a lot of new amps. Period. I mean, I couldn't believe how many different small little boutique amp manufacturers. Yeah.
Well, that's that same trend. You know, we talked about last year where it's people. There's a lot of gear. Yeah. Where for years it was just more and more software and less hardware. Now there's a lot of hardware.
Yeah. A lot of pedal boards, a bazillion guitars. I'm always wondering, you know, I collect guitars, but where do you find the store that actually sells half of these guitars?
Yeah, there were that's a why ton. They're at NAMM, trying to find stores to carry them. Right?
And there were a lot. I mean, downstairs was more guitars than I ever remember.
Yeah,
but also, at this point,
custom pedals.
At this point, a lot of it is just going to be online, you know, which is kind of crazy when you want to play this stuff. But
no one's going to buy. I don't think you're going to buy a guitar just sight unseen. You got to see what kind of neck, how does it feel, how wide is it.
I would think so.
Yeah, you just got to, you know.
But also a lot of those guitars, too, it all depends on where you buy your guitar because, you know, in Los Angeles we have – it's kind of more rock-oriented guitar shops. I mean, you do have your vintage guitar shops and things like that. But, like, back in Nashville, you know, they have stores that cater to, you know, the acoustic –
Well, or McCabe's here,
exactly.
Which is a totally different story.
Exactly, and it's a totally different vibe, and you get tons of different, you know, guitars and tons of different, all these little boutique guitars, the ones that are like $5,000 for an acoustic.
Like they had like the heavy metal guitars that you knew, like there were skulls on them, and they were just really radical looking. And then I saw Purus has no acoustic, and they have a line of amplifiers.
They had a huge booth, those guys.
Yeah, it looked like their line of guitar amps. And now they're selling acoustics.
Okay, I'm going to move on to one thing that I want to get in before we go. And
how can
that's
you leave guitars? I mean, you know.
Because we get
the guitar cast is down the hall.
Another quick one that
sure,
I saw
absolutely.
That's very cool. Mojave, we've talked about their mics a bunch. And the 200, their large diaphragm condenser tube, which is amazing. They have a stereo 200, which just like a C24 top capsule spins to... And it's marked with the angles so you can set up whatever sort of stereo image you want. And also variable pattern for each capsule independently on the power supply. Very cool. And I think it's going to be around $2,000, which is the cost of two.
Yeah, it's like buying tools.
Yeah.
So, phenomenal.
Well, you know, as we're talking about all this gear, and we're talking about all these really cool things and not-so-cool things that we saw at the NAMM show, you know, as we wrap this up, let's put it in perspective, this next year that's coming up. You know, you see a lot of this really cool stuff coming out, and some people have all this techno lust over this. But, you know, we're going into some pretty, you know, precarious economic times. And I don't know if some of this stuff is going to be enough necessarily to shake open people's purse strings. And I don't know if this is necessarily going to be the time for a lot of people to make, you know, big vested, investments in their studio, such as, you know, a $5,000 box or a $2,500 500 series modules. And judging from what the stock market did today,
you know what I missed and what did it do? What
is it do? It's down in the 750 now.
Yeah,
time to buy.
it kind of tanked. You know, I wanted to get your guys' opinion on, you know, great, this is all really cool stuff. But do you think this is going to be enough to really help some of these manufacturers that are kind of hurting? Do you think it's going
to
be?
I'm not buying anything. I mean, for all the stuff I saw that I'd like to get, I will still have 6 available slots in my 500 rack next year. I doubt I'm going to be doing the Kima anytime soon. But I mean, to be fair, I also have a son going to college, and that's going to be crazy. But no. I mean, I think that. And even next year's NAMM, we may not really see the impact of it, but I think 2 NAMMs from now, they'll lose a hall. There won't be a downstairs, I would bet.
Well, I do know next year they're going to Los Angeles. They're not even going to be in Anaheim.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah.
I was hoping that a quarter of the way through my drive to Anaheim as I was passing the Los Angeles Convention Center.
We don't have anywhere to park in Los Angeles.
Although there'll still be a big party at the Hilton.
There's still a tradition, you know?
But, I was, because I was thinking kind of the same thing.
Are they going for 1 year or for further?
I don't know. All I know is just next year. But I'm glad you mentioned that.
I think the low-end stuff is going to do all right. I mean, I think the entry-level, like, hey, I need a microphone or I need a audio interface and a keyboard, you know, for people building up their first thing, I think it's priced where enough people will still do it. But the more expensive stuff, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, because the commercial studios aren't buying anything. And everybody's building their own studios at home, but they're doing it as cheaply as they can now.
I mean, there are no commercial studios going up, really. I mean, it's just...
There are a couple, but they're, you know, it's they have a niche that they fill, and I think that the supply and demand is already kind of evened out on those. So the ones that are around will probably stay open and be booked just enough to stay open, and that's it.
Yeah. And I think in post-production, you've seen a massive buildup of new gear in the last 2 years. I mean, Warner Brothers, many studios were buying Pro Tools.
They'd finally gotten rid of their old stuff.
Yes, everyone turned it around. And I still think there's some icons to be bought within post-production. But other than that, I mean, people were buying like 100 Pro Tools companies, 50, 25, big orders.
Right.
And now I think the orders will be coming in like, I'll get two here, three there, four there. But I think the days where they're buying, you know, $2 million worth of Pro Tools in one leap, I think everyone who needs one has one.
Yeah, that's true.
And now they're going to expand 2, 3, 4, 5 at a time, you know.
Yeah.
Small little bits here and there.
Well, I know for my studio, I'm definitely in a conservative, guarded position where.
This is interesting. Are you concerned because there's less work coming at you, or are you concerned just by the vibe in the society feels like it's going down? Are you actually seeing less work in what you do?
I am definitely seeing less work.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole studio, you know, a little bit of a slowdown. Which is, you know, it's okay. Instead of being overworked and working ridiculous hours, then we're going to, you know, get down to accountant hours. but it just makes people cautious. You know, you just makes people cautious. And I'm even in my own, you know, in Westwave Audio in my studio here, I'm definitely in a cautious mode.
What I don't like about it, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that if nothing's going on in your world, but then all of a sudden you're reacting to something that you think could, then you stop buying. And what happens is the manufacturers can't make as many, so they lay people off.
Right.
Because you're not buying, and all of a sudden everyone's reacting, I hate to say it, to nothing. Because I know in film and games, we are feeling a little bit of the writer's strike that is finally catching up to us.
Yeah.
So we're going to have about 2 or 3 months that are slow. But after that, everyone's got bookings throughout the year in both gaming and movies. So while we're all very cautious, we're looking around going, it hasn't hit us yet specifically.
Well, but that's what I was saying before. I think just like the writer's strike has finally gotten to the post-production side of the stuff that was written. And TV, I think it hit a bit earlier,
Absolutely,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that the slowdown is going to take a couple of years. I mean, all the companies have lost capital value because of the markets as much as anything. And that's why, you know, Digi's laying people off and whatever. None of that is because of reduced sales yet. But I think that's what's coming. And I think in a couple of years, there will be a bunch of companies that were sort of skating by and getting loans and maneuvering to stay open. And there will be no maneuvers left.
Yeah, the people that were barely hanging on will drop.
Yeah, will actually finally go.
Yes.
I just think people right now, you know, if you're out there, just make sure all your purchases, you know, serve you well.
Get them off the credit card.
But, you know, that's true.
But I did see, though, that I was saying before NAMM, what a great opportunity that, again, you look at TC Electronics, which is a really a good quality company. They're steering away. You know, there aren't 6,000s anymore for $10,000, $12,000. They're making, you know, pedal boards, and they're making stuff that normal people can afford. So what's great is they're taking their technologies that they've created, and they're making them much more available in the MI world.
I've seen
in
the performance world.
They sound good.
Right. So then you're looking at some of the, you know, whether it's Chandler or some of the bigger companies.
Yes.
Even you look at Neumann.
Yes.
And you look at these companies, they're like, hey, we're coming out with a mic for $200-$300.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the qualities, it's interesting that people are going to have access to
these high quality companies.
But either they need to cycle back and have a cycle of expensive equipment, or they will become a company that can only afford to make $100
mics. You know what? I don't mean to scare off a lot of manufacturers, but I know for a fact, and I'm not going to mention the manufacturers, but there's within the next 6 months, you're going to see two giants just topple.
Tumble.
Roland.
I'm not going to say who.
But, speaking of which, did anybody hear the SSL Matrix?
No.
I tried and tried to get a demo of what it sounded like, and the guy was just demoing over and over it as a control surface. Yeah. I'm like, big deal. A control surface is one thing. I want to hear it. And I was astonished. Nobody was asking to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, and they were just going, oh, you can switch from Logic to Pro Tools and this bank of faders. And I just wanted to yell over the guy's shoulder, let's hear it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting time. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see who's going to be around, next year. We'll see what the future holds. I will say that if you have a budget, you're definitely, like Scott said, you're going to be able to buy some really cool things
on eBay
or whole companies.
Yeah, eBay.
Can I?
Sure.
I just want to wrap up with one cute little product that I saw. It was something that showed me that the spirit of like the mom and pop kind of inventors is still out there.
Yes.
And it's a little. It is still out there, and I met these two people who have a product now called the Porch Board. And actually, Wayne from Aphex had discovered this thing. Every year he has something crazy in the Aphex booth that they don't make or have anything to do with, but he just puts it in there because it's fun. And he's a guitar player. Last year he had one of those guitars that you hit a button on the back and it folds in half. Have you seen that? It's hilarious. For traveling. And it just looks like a guitar with the neck shattered, and then you spring it apart and it becomes a guitar, and it's cool. He had that last year. This year, Wayne found the Porch Board. And what the Porch Board is this crazy little gadget. I think you can go online to see it.
I'm looking at it right now.
Basically, this thing is hilarious. And I had it demoed for me at Tiffy's restaurant at the corner of West and Catella because they didn't even actually have a booth in the show. So we met them at Tiffy's. And over breakfast, they showed us this thing. And then they ended up bringing it to the Aphex booth because it's so cool. Basically, it's a little bar that you put under your feet. And you stomp your feet while you're playing the guitar, and it gives you a thump that's like the perfect thump. It's sort of like what a bass drum would do, but it's really the exact thump. I mean, it's sort of like,
if you were to hit. It actually is something that's made to emulate or to imitate the old
porch.
Blues dudes in Mississippi when you're stomping on the wood floor. And actually, I saw that 3 years ago. I cannot remember this brother's name. He's a brother with dreadlocks, and he's like a folk pop singer. One of these, like an island guy. No, not him, but somewhere in that. He looks similar to him. And he made one. The dude, man, I'm telling you, you can take that thing. That's the thing about companies. The guy just took it wasn't even maybe like a 1x4, and sort of like nailed it together on its side.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sort of like you're standing up like wood studs, 2x4s. Put a piece of plywood on top of it. The guy connected a mic underneath and had an XLR. Boom.
Well, that's like the low tech version. These people have dedicated themselves. This thing is made of like all green materials.
That's what I figured.
And it's completely passive. It has doesn't need any power or anything else. And it has a switch on it for different frequency ranges. But the thing is, it's like the perfect sound. Mm. I mean, I was trying to like thump on the mic here to kind of give that sound. There's no way to approximate what it does.
That's cool.
But you know what? It's just the coolest thing. And I walked by
Foley, huh?
Well, yeah, if you just need this one exact sound. But the thing that's so cool about it is these people are so dedicated to bringing this thing out. And they have all kinds of big country people who've bought it and, when you hear it, you like it because it's not
amazing.
Complicated, but it's the right sound for that.
It's called the Porch Board Floor Bass.
Yes.
I just found it online.
It totally rocks.
Starting at $239.95.
And I thought it was going to be goofy. And actually, Nadine was her name. Her setting it up in the middle of a breakfast restaurant was a little bit goofy. But the thing was actually cool. And I know I talked to Wayne after the show, and he got a lot of people walking by saying, I have no idea what that is, but I need one.
Yeah.
It's just that perfect thumb.
Well, it's the kind of thing that if you really want to, if stand out from the crowd, you want to do something that not too many other people have. It's a perfect product.
And one of the problems with NAMM is it has gotten incredibly expensive to have a booth there. And so some of these mom and pop companies can't actually get the booth because even the little tiny booth down in the bowels of the hall is really expensive.
I saw half a dozen companies that weren't there.
Oh, there were a lot.
There were still a nice number of companies. However,
no, there were a huge amount of companies.
The ones who didn't have a booth, they were roaming the ground.
Yeah.
Last 2 years, man, it's been a lot of that. They hit you up with a card, a brochure.
And that does work.
It does.
It does work.
It does.
Well, we're going to definitely nominate the Porch Board for the Audio Nowcast NAMM product of 2009.
Oh, Mike, may I please make one little plug?
Sure.
There is a company out there. Actually, they're based in Pasadena, California. They're called Fatfoot, PHATFOOT. Clay and Tammy Drayton are two very nice, just down-to-earth folks who live in Pasadena. And for drummers, we tend to have an issue with the bass drum sliding if we're on a wood floor or, you know, concrete, something like that. We're, you know, doing some kind of gig on a stage, and there's no drum rug.
Uh-huh.
So what the Fatfoot is a plastic device that has an eye, if you will, that the front foot of your seat fits in. And it's a flat device. It's probably, I don't know, 2-3 feet long. And what you can do is attach a piece of Velcro to the bottom of your pedal. And then there's a part, there are these ridges. You know how you have like the Velcro pad and a little Velcro. Sure. Yes, Ben now has it up online. What is the website? Is it fatfoot.com, PHATFOOT.com. And this Velcro device literally sustains your bass drum. It won't slide. Just attach your bass pedal to the bass drum. You hit it, and I mean, I slam into it. It doesn't move. And not only that, I also use it with my keyboard. It also has a sustain pedal stabilizer.
I was going to say, there seemed to be – that was a big deal this year. I saw a few sustain pedal stabilizers, which that's a big problem.
It is. And I use it all the time.
Yeah, in the studio, definitely.
I use it all the time. I perform with my keyboard like a number of times. And, I mean, that pedal did not move.
It sounds like we need to get the Fatfoot people together with the Porch Board people.
You know what? Probably.
Wow. What can happen there?
Yeah.
And they would love the business. They've been trying forever to get into Guitar Center, West LA Music, the drum shop, everything. And no hits. So it's like, you know, the whole corporate thing, you know.
Connects to your chair and keeps the pedal.
Yes.
I used to do the very same thing with a piece of rope.
With a piece of rope.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's exactly why I started using it, because I used a piece of rope.
Yep.
Back home in Tennessee for years.
Well, you know what? I think if we can get the Fatfoot people and the Porch Board people together, I bet you next year they have like an 80-by-80-foot booth at NAMM. It just like totally takes over the whole
thing. It would be awesome. It would be awesome. So check it out.
All right, check that out. We're going to wrap it up now, but yeah, that's kind of cool. I went to their website too, and that looks pretty cool. It's like a leash for your equipment, so it doesn't go running off, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
It is, definitely.
Because if you kick it, it wants to run away.
Well put. Well, gang, that's our wrap up of NAMM. And, I just hope next year, with the economy, the way it is, I hope a lot of these companies make it. I know a couple of them that aren't going to make it. And, if you're out there, music is one of those things. If you invest in a ukulele or a Kima or whatever, it's really for the amount of joy and pleasure that you can get out of it. It's a relatively low investment. Go ahead.
And I'd also have to say that whatever happens with the economy in the next year before next NAMM, I really felt like the industry and all the manufacturers really kind of understand. They don't know the specifics of what lies ahead, but everybody realizes that something has to change. Yeah. And I think that's why we see a lot of shuffling of people and changing of product lines and things like that. But I don't think at this point anybody's going into it with their head in the sand. I think everybody realizes that, you know, there are some big changes that need to happen. So I felt good about that. I felt like everybody's at least trying to work on the problem. They're not just pretending it isn't
absolutely
a problem.
Absolutely.
And the manufacturers, I think, are working together. There's like
yeah, much more.
You know, they're allowing the exchange of ideas. You got things like the VPR Alliance. You've got, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, helping each other out. And I think that can only benefit us all in the long run. So go buy a ukulele and make some music. Rob, you working on anything you can talk about before we go? Or
Well, actually, I'm working on a bunch of things I can't talk about, but I will talk about one thing, and that is that I announced we were going to be having some album releases coming up, and the first one has actually hit iTunes, and it is the first album from Orbit Monkey. And we're going to be talking more about that on here in the future, I'm sure. But by the time this podcast is available, you'll be able to go to orbitmonkey.com or myspace.com/orbitmonkey, and you'll be able to get links to the new album. It's a pretty cool rock pop album, so check it out.
Andrew, how about you?
Well, a band I worked with, I think I mentioned them before, from Oakland, Audrey Sessions. Their album's finally coming out February 17th, but they've been getting a lot of radio ads. They're on MTVU, which is a college-only MTV that plays nothing but music videos, if you can imagine that.
Ooh, wow.
I remember that once upon a time.
So the buzz, it's like, I mean, yeah, we all know what's going on in the world and the economy, but this is like the old days, like, oh my God, there's a buzz. And it's coming out. So that's really, really good.
That's
so
cool.
Audrey Sessions.
Audrey Sessions.
And it's spelled
A-U-D-R-Y-E.
Yes.
It's spelled wrong, but it means when you type it the way it's spelled, all you get is the band. So.
Gotcha.
I don't, yeah.
Fancy. Forrest.
trying to take lead on a few things. I mentioned some time back about a project I'm working on with a good friend of mine named Frankie Love, and we're working on this live trance house thing, ambient lounge music, and I'm writing all the music for that and co-writing with the lyrics and everything. So I'm hoping and praying to get that out within the next couple months. And I'm working on my first solo CD, which is actually going to be more piano-based, but I'm going to try to see if I can morph from the whole new age ethereal into tribal, with some hints of metal. I have such a big metal background, and just trying to really take lead on these things. And there's a tribute to Black Sabbath that's being released pretty soon, probably within the next couple months. And I worked with former guitarist of Ronnie James Dio, metal god of the 80s, one of many. And we just tracked this song, Killing Yourself to Live. So it's like completely respecting the form of Black Sabbath, and I'm completely respecting Bill Ward, except there's lots of wicked double bass stuff that's going on that I was allowed to do. So we'll see what's going on with that.
Phil?
Well, my main stage tutorial's out now and selling very well. And towards the end, there's 73 videos on there. And towards the end, I get to the fun stuff, show how to run Ableton through main stage and run keyboards through the guitar pedals. And I'm going to be doing live. So it's going to be Ableton 8 with that controller for Mac Pro Video. I've started a new record, and I'm stoked on that. Getting that going. And then somewhere in the back of the deal, I got to box up my 150 film music things and say, hey, buy this. Just get some of the inventory of songs and compositions up and out.
Wow.
So that's another not as fun thing, but those are all coming.
That's great. And just wanted to say that in a future Audio Nowcast, we're going to be talking about some of the resources out there for people who wants to train on some of the various software and things like that. And we're going to be talking with Bill about some of the stuff that he's done. So looking forward to doing that. Scott, we know you're working on a bunch of
stuff.
Hello.
Actually, just a couple of days ago, came back from Japan, where I was there for, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 days. It was kind of a blur. We went to Tokyo and Osaka. And I then literally from that went right back to the mix stage where I'm finishing up game and starting another movie with the same directors called Crank High Voltage. And I'm going to go spend the next 3 to 4 weeks doing that. And then, pop on to the next project.
Great. Well, the NAMM show was really a great benefit to the Audio Nowcast. We met a lot of really cool people and lined up some really cool guests for the next couple of podcasts that are going to be coming down the pipe. I know Rob met a lot of people.
A lot of people have heard about the podcast, and a lot of people want to come on.
Yeah, and ran into Joe Ciccarelli, and he apologized for not being able to come here that one time, but he wants to to get here, so we're going to have to work out our schedule to make that happen. But, you know, coming up this year, this is show number 62, and we're coming up to our third year, going into our fourth year, and we're going to be doing some really fun things, and we're going to do a couple really good back to the basics type of stuff. We're going to be doing a show on mixing, talking about mixing techniques, talking about mixing boards. We're going to make sure Andrew can make it to that one. we're going to mix a little bit of guests with a little bit of instructional, and we're just going to keep going until we run out of steam, which is hopefully not anytime soon. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Audio Nowcast. And once again, if you have any questions, for any of the guys, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And also look out for our Facebook group. You on Facebook, Rob?
About to be.
All right. See, and that way you can find out the status of Rob.
You know what's weird? I mean, Facebook's been around for a while, but there was something over the holiday break, like Christmas to New Year's. I was just running into floods of people who all said they were getting on Facebook for the first time.
I was bludgeoned into it.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't want to do it.
I joined Facebook in the end of November.
It's like everybody did.
Every week there's 20 people that are, I mean, it's
That's
like.
That's why I'm not joining.
Yeah. I thought MySpace was enough, and now this Facebook is just taken off.
It's very
off.
Different, though.
It's a little different. I joined in back in August, I think, and it just sat dormant for a long time, and then I got a message from Vanessa, and then it just kind of exploded from there, and then I got more friends, and then I got a lot of people that I just had no idea who these people were. So
yeah, but you apparently went to kindergarten with them or something. I don't get it, but there was some kind of huge explosion of Facebook signing up over the holidays.
They're finding now that adults, not Facebook is like just for kids, and now they're finding adults. But, you know, for me, you joked about kindergarten, but I am actually hooking up with people from elementary, high school, bands. Yeah. That I mean, I haven't seen people in 30 years. I'm like, wow, 35, like, what have you been doing?
It's kind of nice because it just runs itself. You don't have to do anything.
Well, look for our group, Audio Nowcasts, on Facebook.
And buy Melodyne.
And buy Melodyne. All right.
Okay, and buy
It's pretty cool.
It's finally there.
We'll have to hook up with Thomas and do the Skype thing with him from
Germany.
Yeah,
now that he's allowed to talk about some of the stuff he wasn't allowed to talk about.
Exactly. All right, gang. Well, hey, once again, just thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time, and spend some money on some music.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaolo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.